Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan on News Talk.
Alan Buckley from the Irish Rock and Roll Museum Experience is here to tell us about the making of REM. That, of course, is Drive. How are you?
This is one of my favourites.
Yeah.
So I've honed in on one album here, and it is called Automatic for the People. And for me, this is one of the most genre-defining albums of its era, and perhaps still continues to be of huge influence.
At what point did they release this?
This is in the early 90s.
Right.
And this is, I think I'm about 16 when I hear this. I had been aware of REM, and they had hits, but you know when a band has a series of big hits and they are now the next big thing, and then you have to deliver that next album, and this is the album. It sells absolutely gazillions of copies, and we'll come to the influence in terms of
how many how far into their career was this?
This is album number five.
Yeah. Tell me about REM.
So they're Southern boys from a place called Athens in Georgia. So most people will know Atlanta in Georgia, and a little bit, a couple of hours from there, is a university town. So it's known as a place where a lot of college students, college bands and things like that have come out of there. Another band to come out of that scene would have been the B-52s from Athens, Georgia. And these guys meet. Initially, it's the lead singer, Michael Stipe, the amazing vocalist from REM, and the guitar player, Peter Book. And they start getting their music out there. So we do hear some very... their early sound is very much that kind of indie college rock albums like Document and Murmur and Reckoning. And then they release an album called Green, which does quite well. But there's an album called Out of Time, which features a song which I'd say we'll talk about, called Losing My Religion.
Who's in the band?
So they don't exist anymore. They did disband in, I think it was 2001, which is actually shocking to me. Or was it? No, maybe it's 2011, actually. But 15 years ago or so, they decided to call it a day, partly because of some health issues.
Right.
Their drummer had his name was Bill Berry, and he had a brain aneurysm. And he had to step out of the band, obviously, and all that. And then they went with a different drummer for a while. But there was something not quite there. And they, it's interesting because sometimes we look at bands. I mean, I saw AC/DC a few years ago. You know, they're still going. Mm. You know, they'll go until they drop, kind of thing. Or some bands actually just go, we've done what we needed to do in music. Perhaps there's a poetry to that. There it is. Everybody Hurts. You know that one.
It's a beautiful song.
It's gorgeous. Actually, one of their biggest
hits.
Is it my favourite song by them? It's one of those songs that I have to be in exactly the right mood to listen to.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's a pick-me-up. It isn't. And in a way, it kind of is, if you know what I mean, because it's designed to empathise with someone who's and people who are going through a lot. The video for this is amazing. It's kind of shot on a highway where everyone gets out of their cars, and this sort of communal consciousness moment that we're all in this together. Amazing vocal. If you ask me why REM are the phenomenon that they were, with the utmost respect to the rest of the guys in the band, it is that voice that really sets
them
apart.
That's the reason.
And I'm a lucky man because I've met Michael Stipe.
Have you?
I have.
Where?
Well, a lot of people think they have the best dad in the world. I do. and my dad used to work in a place called Luttrellstown Castle.
Oh, yeah.
And
where the Beckhams got married.
Exactly. My father was there. He was the assistant to the best man, Gary Neville, at that. Yes.
He was not.
He actually
would have to get your dad on.
He would actually love that.
Really,
actually would probably be better than me. but he was working there at a time when REM were about to play Slain.
Ah, wow.
And they came and stayed there. And I actually did a little bit of work. I would have been about 18, 19 at the time. So he used to get me in to do a little bit of passing around the hors d'oeuvres trays.
Yeah.
And doing, you know, handing out drinks and things like that. It was a nice little summer earner. But one of the days we went to pick up my dad and he said, come with me, because I've talked to the manager. And they let me sit in on their rehearsal.
Oh, my God.
And this was, you know, Eve of Slain, which I was going to. I was there in 95 when they played. So
what a story to be able to tell.
Sat there as they practiced. I didn't outstay my welcome. After about 5 minutes, I felt like, okay, I better. But I worked at a party. U2 came, the Hothouse Flowers were there. It was amazing. But thanks, Dad. That was an amazing memory. Because they say never meet your heroes. Yeah. But I have to
Did
say,
you get to talk to them?
Oh, gentlemen.
Really? Good.
Gentlemen.
Well, that's always good to hear. Yeah. When did the kind of really break through?
So, losing my religion.
Yeah.
By the numbers, their biggest hit. And as I said, that comes from the album that immediately precedes this. So as I said, that's amazing success, but it also creates expectation.
Yeah.
So Losing My Religion, and again, amazing video.
Is that their most successful song?
It is their biggest hit.
Yeah.
100%. But in terms of album sales, this one sells more than the album that Losing My Religion was on. In total, REM sold about 90 million albums.
Well, let's take a look at some or listen to some of the other songs in this album.
I forgot my shirt at the water's edge.
This Night Swimming. You probably know it from the annual News Talk skinny dipping expedition. But it is very much a harking back of the joys of youth and the freedoms of youth. And of course the band themselves, I mean, they're bohemian chaps, and this is kind of biographical about when they were young and they used to go to these rock pools in Georgia and go skinny dipping and have parties and all of that. And it's I mean, I know the album when we play these tracks doesn't have it's not upbeat, it's not, but it's the lyrical beauty of what he achieves in these songs and the sense of place.
Is that what makes them stand out at the time?
Incredible. I mean, if we want to talk about influence, you know, I mean, Radiohead, Coldplay, bands like even Nirvana. Kurt Cobain was actually scheduled to do guest vocals on the album Monster, which comes after this one. And sadly, he died before that happened. Michael Stipe and Kurt Cobain were very good friends. And I was at Slain in 95 when they played a song from the album Monster called Let Me In. And to this day, I can remember it was like a transcendent moment because you could hear the heartbreak in Michael Stipe's voice. Kurt had died less than a year before that. And it was, you know, I don't know how many people in Slain, 80,000. And you know those plastic cups, paper cups that you get, you know, the ones that are kind of waxy with the Coca-Cola on them. Everyone started throwing them in the air. You can see this on YouTube.
Yeah.
It's a very bad video. It doesn't really capture it. But because everyone was throwing them in the air at the same time, it created a kind of a red haze over the crowd. And there was, during this song, and talk about a transcendent moment that I'll just never forget. I'm a massive Nirvana fan, as you know, so it was particularly poignant. The Sidewinder Sleeps Tonight, which I had to do, Andrea, just so that to show there's a few songs on the album. They're a little bit more
lively. Sounds slightly different.
And in fairness, the band themselves, although they liked the track, they never played it live. They kind
Did
of,
they not? Why?
Yeah, they kind of regarded it as a little bit lightweight or a bit of fluff. And for whatever reason, they decide they actually never play this song live at all. And it has one of those choruses where you're like, what? What are they actually saying? You know, it's like the call me and trying to wake her up is what they're actually saying. And that took me a while to figure out before the internet. but it's a lovely little bit of song. It's actually a riff on "The Lion Sleeps Tonight," you know, the okay. old song. So instead, there's a slight twist, different animal, but same theme. So it's meant to be kind of a little harmonizing bit of fun.
Why do you think they're still so respected today, even since?
Because I think there's very few bum notes in their career. I will say that some of their later albums are certainly not as strong. And the interesting thing is, I think they realize that themselves. There's highlights from some of their later songs. They have a song, I think it's from New Adventures in Hi-Fi, where they have a song called "Leaving New York," which is a masterpiece of a song. But it seemed to be that their joie de vivre had lessened, their grow for it had just lessened over the years. But I think if you look at 90s indie rock and pop, if you ask me who's the most influential bands of that era, I would say REM and Radiohead, hands down.
We're leaving listeners today with "Man on the Moon."
Great track. A little bit more upbeat again. Yeah. And it's interesting, the song comes before a film of the same name about the same thing. So "Man on the Moon" relates to, it's a tribute to an American comedian, Andy Kaufman, who Jim Carrey would play in the film. And actually, there's a brilliant documentary out there about Jim Carrey during the making of this. He's a very strange man, very, very talented. But you'll see if you watch the documentary, his process was somewhat involved. But Andy Kaufman himself was a very troubled man with mental health issues and things like that. And one of his shticks that he would do in comedy was riff on that the moon landings were fake. So it's this the idea of the song is very much, not that they're saying the moon landings are fake, but they're saying that if you believe in everything that people tell you, then what's cool anymore? You know, it's, you know, have an old conspiracy theory now and again.
The biggest hit from this album?
Yes, yes. Yeah. Everybody Hurts and this are very, very close, but this one just pips it, I think. And perhaps the most foot-tapping one from the album
as well. That's a great song.
I just love it.
Well, we let the listeners enjoy it. Alan Buckley from the Irish Rock and Roll Museum Experience, thanks a million for joining us to tell us about the making of REM.
Thanks, Dad. They put a man on the moon, man on the moon.
Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan. Weekdays at midday on News Talk. Conversation that counts.